Welcome. I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. U.S. Attorney General Eric Holder has been conducting listening sessions across the country about how to improve police and community relations. On February 5th, he held two roundtable discussions in Oakland and San Francisco, where diverse groups told him police need more training to deal with racial bias and people with mental illnesses. Community members also said lack of economic opportunity deserves far more attention. Over the past 2 months, we've done shows about everything from the grand jury process to unconscious bias. And almost every guest we've had on has said that poverty is the issue. If we really want to deal with police killings and community relations, improving those two, we have to talk about poverty. So on today's Your Call, we'll continue our series on police, community, race, and justice with a conversation about economic justice. Do you think the discussion about police accountability and tactics has obscured more fundamental issues like unemployment, substandard schools, and lack of opportunity, just to name a few? Is increased opportunity, economic opportunity, the key to build better relations between police and communities of color? Joining us to talk about these issues is Zachary Norris, Executive Director of the Ella Baker Center for Human Rights. The center supports policies to ensure dignity and opportunity for low-income communities and people of color. And Zachary joins me in studio. Hi, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for coming on. We're also joined by Ethel Long Scott, Executive Director of the Women's Economic Agenda Project. That's an organization that promotes economic human rights for poor women and their families. Hi, Ethel. Welcome back to the show.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Glad to be here.
It's great to have you. So it's been kind of striking, not really surprising, but from cops to professors to lawyers to community activists, whenever we do shows about these issues, almost every single guest has said, you know, it really goes back to poverty and race and class, but really poverty. Zachary, what are your thoughts on that? Do you agree?
Yeah, I agree that with your statement that it is about race and class. And what I believe we need is a real truth and reconciliation or reinvestment. So police killings happen every 28 hours. A black person is killed by a police or vigilante. We know that those killings of Eric Garner, most recently in Emeryville, Yvette Henderson, often involve some sort of encounter with the police that happens as a result of economic injustice. For example, Eric Garner was accused of selling loose cigarettes, right? But they found no cigarettes on his person, and he ended up getting choked to death by police officers. That's the first part of the problem. The second part of the problem, though, is that medical attendants did nothing to actually make sure that his air passage was unblocked. And so he died basically on the scene unnecessarily because of systemic indifference, not just on the part of the police, but also on the part of these medical personnel who didn't do the things they should have and probably would have if he was not a black man. And so in my estimation, we really need to look at a long history of racial injustice in this country and its current manifestations, begin with that analysis, and then say, what are the structural changes we need to see in society, often economic related, but must be rooted in an understanding of that long history.
And to the point you made about Eric Garner, I read in just a few articles, not that many, that he was actually selling cigarettes to help feed his family.
That's right.
Ethel, what are your thoughts about that and the fact that so many of our guests during this series on police and community relations say that it goes back to poverty?
Well, I mean, I think that the initial guest has really capitalized it. I think that we are looking at some really massive changes that are happening in our country and really globally. And certainly this question of poverty is so central to everything. But I think we got to step back a moment, because what has happened is that the police now are basically serving the billionaires and millionaires. And I think that it was Abdul Jabbar who last year was saying, look, really increasingly we are facing this reality of class and race. And I think that this is something, it's the new Jim Crow, which is supposed to be post-racial America, but really it really earmarks that we are facing a new kind of racism that combines the two. And then secondly, we are looking at the rise of the corporate agenda and who is actually being served. most of our democratic rights are being vanquished. Oftentimes, we're really talking about that the police are becoming judge, jury, and executioner. And when you have a discussion about it, they say, well, we're trained to shoot to kill. This is a political issue. It is not a matter of simple policy tweaking. This is not a matter of, you know, to get them to stop killing us. We have got to see how do we move to put the value on the lives of all human beings. And right now, structurally, everything is working in an opposite position.
So, Ethel, you spend your time running the Women's Economic Agenda Project. This is an organization that promotes economic human rights for poor women and their families. And you focus on such a wide range of topics. How do you decide where to really put your energy? Because these issues are now starting, well, for the last few years, I mean, they're starting to get a lot of national attention.
Well, I think that it was the Occupy movement that said it's not one thing, it's all of them. Mm-hmm. And if you are the person on the receiving end, if you are a young African American male, or if you're a young Latino person or a poor person, God forbid, that might have mental illness, your life is not valued very much. And I really think what's hard for us in this country is that we pay our money and our little bit of resources, and we think the police are protect and serve all of us. Well, really, that's not what the deal is. And I think that, so what we find is that educating the community so that we might unveil what are the engines that are actually driving this process, and how might we fight to develop a deeper understanding in the way that Mr. Zachary spoke to, but to build unity. And actually, these movements, these atrocious actions that have happened have actually helped facilitate individual families that are traumatized beginning to understand that we need a united movement that stops this authoritarian effort and stops this enthronement of these corporations.
Yeah, I mean, I just want to add that there are concrete steps along the way. Memphis instituted their police department uses crisis intervention teams when someone is having a mental health crisis. So rather than the police responding as they normally would, they are trained to actually respond and de-escalate. And so that report that I mentioned by the McCormick grassroots movement that found that every 28 hours a black person is killed by police or vigilante, those numbers start to come down when police departments institute de-escalation practices. Though that is one concrete step that can be taken. But I think the larger global picture is that we really do need a reinvestment paradigm, and that's why we push for a books not bars, jobs not jails agenda. Here in Alameda County, we know that as a result, in Alameda County where the Ella Baker Center is based, we know that the county is getting some $30 million per year because of the state's overcrowding crisis. So basically, the state's prison system was found to be unconstitutionally overcrowded. They said certain folks will no longer be sent to the state prison system. Counties, you deal with the problem. Now, what's happened is, unfortunately, up to this point, more of the same. Counties are, for the most part, jailing folks who haven't been convicted of less serious offenses rather than investing in employment opportunities, housing opportunities as they could and should be. And so we're pushing as an organization on the Alameda County Board of Supervisors to invest in a books not bars and jobs not jails agenda. And I think certain supervisors get this. And they get parts of it, but we want them to get the whole thing. So, for example, Supervisor Keith Carson has called for the year of the African-American male. He said that, you know, too many young people are being suspended, expelled, incarcerated African-American men. Supervisor Wilma Chan has said we need a new war on poverty. And we actually think we need to combine and see those things together, that we need a jobs not jails, books not bars agenda that really recognizes that black lives matter, that Latino lives matter, and that the folks who have been systemically incarcerated actually deserve opportunity. And when we give folk those opportunity, when we provide a different level of the playing field, that people do well.
I think there's another aspect, obviously, in addition to the very explicit proposals that Zachary is speaking to, that is, we've got to deconstruct this piece, and that, as you said, what is it we spend our time focusing on? And that's that education part. Mm-hmm. There is tremendous monetary value in jailing people who are either unemployed or unemployable or whom are deemed expendable. In these same communities, we are facing tremendous displacement and gentrification. So it is clear we have got to talk about why are these forces militarized, and they are increasingly militarized. We've seen this in the in what happened in Ferguson when citizens peacefully convened to protest yet another murder unpunished by the police, and the dogs were let loose. These are, we cannot simply train our way out of this.
Yeah.
We cannot simply adjust what color or gender the heads of these departments are. We, the whole damn system is guilty, and we have got to proceed from not one or the other, certainly the kinds of carefully delineated examples here, but we have got to get to the root. How do we elevate that all lives matter? And for all lives to matter, Black lives must matter.
That's right.
That is Ethel Long Scott, Executive Director of the Women's Economic Agenda Project. That's an organization that promotes economic human rights for poor women and their families. And Zachary Norris is Executive Director of the Ella Baker Center for Human Rights. They support policies to ensure dignity and opportunity for low-income communities and people of color. Today, we are continuing our series on police, community, race, and justice. And we started seeing a theme when we did these shows. We've done about 8 shows now, from how public defenders deal in court. We talked about unconscious bias. We've had on cops. We've had on professors. And most of them have said it all goes back to poverty. So what are your thoughts on that? We'd love to hear from you. What are you seeing in your communities? How do you think class really affects police and community relations? The toll-free number is 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. If there are groups in your neighborhood that are doing really good things like the organizations that we have on today, we'd love to hear about that. And if you work in the field of trying to create more economic opportunity, we'd love to hear from you. Also, what are you seeing? I mean, people with multiple college degrees are having a hard time getting a job in some places. So what are you seeing in terms of what opportunities are out there for young people in communities of color? 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org. Both of you were talking about how much society spends, or governments, I should say, spends on jail versus schools. And you brought up what's going on in Alameda County, Zachary. Mm-hmm. On March 3rd, the Alameda County Board will vote on their public safety budget, and you're all having a rally to demand that they put more funding towards programs and prioritize jobs, not jails. So March 3rd, 10:45, the county building in Oakland, 1221 Oak Street, 5th floor.
Thank you so much for giving that plug. We appreciate it. You know, we spend $150,000 per year per young person in the California Youth Authority in the youth prison system in California, and only about $8,000 per pupil in public education. So this is very much an economic issue, but it's not only an economic issue, as I've talked about. You know, when I was born in 1977, Prop 13 came through, shifted the tax burden in 1978 from corporations to the people. At that same time, we saw the largest prison building boom in human history take off, starting right here in California. And so those things in my mind are connected. And that is why we say that we're now currently suffering from a punishing economy, where too many everyday problems have criminal justice so-called solutions. So if you have a mental health issue, if you have a drug use or abuse mm-hmm. issue, those issues are dealt with through the criminal justice system, and people who are already impoverished are more deeply impoverished as a result of their interaction with the criminal justice system. For example, one in three families face a difficult choice between paying for basic necessities like food and making court-related payments when their children are in a youth prison. And those kinds of that is really a cycle of poverty and incarceration that we really have to break.
I think there's another, and that certainly is right on point. I think there's another aspect, and the thing that's kind of pushing this whole thing is that the manufacturing base that so much of the country was built on has actually been decimated. We're in a digital era. We live in the shadow of some of the largest entities on the planet, and they've recently shown essentially how they deal with it, an encampment of 300 homeless people who all they owned was the pavement under their feet were summarily thrown out for the crime of trying to eke out shelter in a ditch. And these groupings are really reshaping the Bay Area. And I think that it's really important that we look at this because these corporations, they have more power. And they are reshaping policy, the very policy we're discussing. And I think that when you look at the impact of this change in the manufacturing base, is that we're seeing that the poverty is shifting from not only in inner cities that many of us have battled for decades in the way that Zachary and certainly the Ella Baker Center has addressed, but they're also expanding into the suburbs. Mm. And in those suburbs, the Brookings Institute and others have cited, are increasingly of all colors. I think that there's a reason that we are seeing an increased number of Fight for 15, to move the minimum wage up from not only the inner cities but throughout all these small areas where there's essentially service areas and the wages are so very low. It's clear to me, and I want to just elevate, that this question of uniting these efforts of vanquishing poverty, this is something, it's not new. Mm-hmm. Dr. King had it as a part of his goal more than 50 years ago, and that is this question of poverty elimination. The things that change economically and politically, how we begin to position ourselves in relationship to these things. And we have got to talk about how that impacts this question of that and how it is juxtaposed to an agenda of Silicon Valley and their many, many minions who are basically restructuring. We can't afford to live in the cities if we have a job in them, and we can't, and many, as in our city of Oakland, more than in the past 10 years, 50% of the African-American population has been displaced. Some people will cheer that because they consider, oh, they're dregs on society, let's get rid of them. They don't say that in the appropriate places. You don't use that language, but that is what is being pursued. So we cannot uncouple these things. The question of corporate agenda and the new Jim Crow are integrally connected.
Etha Long Scott is Executive Director of the Women's Economic Agenda Project. Zachary Norris is Executive Director of the Ella Baker Center for Human Rights. We'd love to hear from you on this issue of increasing economic opportunity and really dealing with poverty. These are some of the root causes of why we're seeing so much economic inopportunity and bad relations between police and communities of color. A lot of our guests have said this. They said we need to stop tippy-toeing around these issues and really go to the root of the problem. So what are your thoughts on this? 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org. These are very big issues, but there's so many different campaigns to tackle these. So what do you think is most effective? You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org. Let's hear from Greg in Palo Alto. Hi, Greg. Welcome to the show.
Hello. Well, I guess I'll address this from my standpoint as a disabled person who's low income and who has his radio turned up too loud. Hold on.
Okay, thanks.
I mean, I've had experiences with the police where I live, and I can tell you that you're going to get the same kind of treatment that anybody else who's low income or is in one of the groupings that you mentioned, whether you're a person of color or you might have a quote unquote mental health issue. Most of this does stem from, as far as I'm concerned, poverty. I think that is a crucial issue. So you're gonna end up on the short end of the stick. as anybody else who is impoverished. And if you are subjected to police misconduct, which is, I think, rampant, you're not going to get redress. The system is not set up to get redress. I mean, you're not going to be able to get into court, get your day in court, and try and get some kind of, like I said, redress for whatever misconduct you've been subjected to, depending on the degree of it, whatever. You're stuck, unfortunately, and that's the case for anybody who is poor in this society. Unfortunately, I don't have an option, an alternative. I wish I did. I don't know if organizing would be able to do something, but the system is just broken. It's corrupt, and it doesn't work for people who are poor in this country.
Mm-hmm. Zachary?
Yeah, I mean, I think that. I'm inspired, despite a lot of bad news. You know, we saw the movie Selma, many of us. If you haven't seen it, you should go see it. It demonstrates what a determined group of people can accomplish in passing the Voting Rights Act. And yet we know that 50 years later, many of those protections have been eroded. So it's important to recognize that structural racism, structural inequity continue to exist, but it's also important to recognize that we have been successful in the past in really engaging and in waging campaigns to turn the tide. And one example of that is some of the work that we're doing in Alameda County. We have gotten the Board of Supervisors to allocate $3 million that they hadn't planned on doing before, away from the sheriffs and towards programs and services. Another example is Proposition 47, which was passed by California voters, which says that money saved from reducing people convicted of less serious offenses will go to the Board of State and Community Corrections, Department of Education, and Victim Services. Now, we know that this is why I say that just economics is not enough, because what we know to be true is that if you just give that money to the Department of Education and say address truancy, they may institute more police in schools, they may do a whole host of things that have terrible racial justice implications. And so for me, it is really important to always hold those two things together and really lift up that we need to change the paradigm in our country as it relates to racial relations, but also as it relates to economic justice.
I think that what the caller and Zachary just spoke to really underscores certainly the things that both of them are raising, but it also raises that we need a broad movement. So two things. We've got to have a vision that these people cannot be judge, jury, and executioner. They have to stop killing us. I mean, truly, that's got to be part of the American vision. And the fact that that has become less, and when a gentleman who is disabled can say, he's not expecting justice. Mm-hmm. This is big. That's a big indictment. But I think that the other thing is this is an opportunity to build and unite a movement that secures these issues, that elevates the kinds of things that we're, experimenting with in our county and in our state. But we have to have a sense that these corporations, the fact that the Supreme Court has enthroned them, I don't know how else to say it, many of our problems stem from and are interconnected. We know that this is also fueling attacks on broader sections of the population.
And Ethel, hold that thought. We're going to take a quick break. Today we're continuing our series on police, community, race, and justice by talking about poverty. This is Your Call. We'll be back after this.
Lots of ways to take part in our conversation on Your Call on the phone. Toll free, 866-798-8255. 866-798-TALK. You can also send your question or comment via email to feedback@yourcallradio.org. Coming up at 11 o'clock, World Have Your Say from the BBC. At noon today, it's This American Life, and at 1, Glenn Washington and Snap Judgment.
This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Coming up tomorrow, we're going to have a conversation about President Obama's war resolution and the request for Congress to authorize military action against ISIS. For the past 6 months, the U.S. and coalition forces have carried out more than 2,000 bombing raids against ISIS in Syria and Iraq. What's been the result of those bombings? What are the details of President Obama's latest war resolution? What questions do you have and where do you stand? That's tomorrow. If you have a show idea or a guest idea, you can drop us a line, feedback@yourcallradio.org. Today, we are continuing our series on police, community, race, and justice by talking about poverty. We've done a bunch of shows over the last 2 months, and almost every guest we've had on, from public defenders to cops, have said that poverty is the issue that we really need to tackle. So what are your thoughts on that? Do you think that the discussion about police accountability and tactics has really obscured more fundamental issues like lack of opportunity, substandard schools, unemployment? What are your thoughts on that? Do you think increased economic opportunity is really the key? You can give us a call at 866-798-8255. If so, what do you think is most effective? There are so many programs, organizations out there that are really tackling these issues. We've got a lot of success stories, but what do you think is most effective? You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org. Today, we're joined by Zachary Norris, Executive Director of the Ella Baker Center for Human Rights, and Ethel Long Scott, Executive Director of the Women's Economic Agenda Project. And Greg, thank you again for calling in and sharing your story and your thoughts. Let's go next to Cynthia in Santa Cruz. Hi, Cynthia. Welcome to the show. Let's try Philip in Brisbane. Hi, Philip.
Hi, good morning. I think that the real serious problems in this country started when factory jobs started to be offshored. Mm-hmm. But since the playing field is leveling out, you'll see people in China today not returning to the cities because they just can't afford to live there, even though they make supposedly a living wage. Well, we could have here, right here, I think we could bring back factories if there's a will to do it in such a way that they could be subsidized by governmental and non-governmental agencies until they become viable. We could be combining factory employment with green solutions. For instance, we could be manufacturing solar panels right here, which would solve tremendous problems with the climate and with electricity bills, and at the same time giving people employment. And we could be doing a host of things like that if people wanted to do it.
And if we have the political will.
That's right.
I think this is along the lines of the kind of thinking that we have to do outside the box that includes the notion of economic justice. And economic justice is tied to poverty elimination. But I do need to caution, we are up against a political force as the Alex and the Koch brothers who are at this moment working to vanquish institutions, civil rights legislations, trade unions, entities that have fought to secure higher incomes and a level playing field. I think that until we have a sense of what we're up against, people say poverty, but implicit in their narrative is that somehow the people who are poor are at fault for their circumstances, as opposed to something has happened that has put millions and millions and millions of Americans at risk. And the police oftentimes, you know, carry that narrative, especially since, for the most part, their job is to protect the rich people. So this becomes an increasingly polarizing situation. And, of course, any of those of us who speak to it become as much painted with the same brush as everyone else. However, the example the gentleman gave, it also offers the tremendous capabilities and abundance if we could redirect those human resources and assets to benefit all of our people.
Yeah, I really agree with Ethel, and I just wanted to state regarding a comment earlier that I don't believe that we can train the police out of this problem, but I do believe that there are steps along the way that we can take to advance racial and economic justice. So, you know, ultimately, I do think we need somewhat of a new deal that is rooted in racial and economic justice, and that is part of the reason why the Ella Baker Center has pushed for a green collar jobs movement and helped pass the Federal Green Jobs Act in 2007. Obviously, not the end-all, be-all, but something that we're proud of having helped produce. What we're doing right here in Oakland, we're initiating in conjunction with the Restaurant Opportunity Centers United, what we're calling the Restore Oakland Center, which would be a home for restorative justice and restorative economics. It would house a restaurant space that would be run by formerly incarcerated folks and their families. It would employ low-income people. We want to do it 100% green. We want to also house restorative justice programs in that space as an alternative to the traditional criminal justice system, which sends people far away from their families and communities at tremendous cost, and instead use restorative justice, which circles people together, holds that person accountable who's committed a harm, but also holds them in community. And by investing in communities and public safety solutions that keep people in the community, we believe that we can actually make a difference. And so those are some of the things that we're doing. Certainly not the end-all, be-all, but just want to say that there's hope out there.
I love that. What's the status of this? Where can we find more information about this?
It's a very new initiative, but if you check out colorsrestaurants.com, you can see some of the restaurants that are already operative in New York and Detroit that are run by the Restaurant Opportunity Centers United.
It reminds me of the Delancey Street Restaurant by the ballpark.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
It's run by formerly incarcerated people. They've got a cafe. Mm-hmm. Also, the Homeboy Industries comes to mind. Mm-hmm. They just started a food truck. They've got an amazing cafe in Los Angeles. They sell things at farmers markets. And this goes back to, I always think about this also, Ethel, because I think this is really important in this kind of conversation, is trauma and what young people really go through. A research suggests that poverty in the first few years of life may undermine brain development, adversely affect overall health status, and lead to diminished success in early elementary school, lower the chances of ever completing high school. This is according to the Public Policy Institute. When you speak to people who run groups like Homeboy or Delancey, they say that, some of the most hardened kids they work with really just want to be loved. I mean, it's that simple, right? I mean, that's not going to solve these problems, but that's really where it starts.
I think that that's really right on point. And I think that in face of the kinds of things we've been looking at here in the Bay Area, across the country, so much of our social safety net is being destroyed. At the same time, we're having this conversation about the importance of poverty, and I might add again, elevating that question of poverty elimination as a part of a cause that we really try to secure, we're looking at the social contract being rewritten. And so it's not that we, the workers, want it rewritten away from these resources, but increasingly these major entities are either taking over our governments, they're moving more and more of the workers and services that we need either into a part-time or non-existent category. And so we're under fire. There's no two ways about it. And so it's very clear that these kinds of ways that we've talked about, these programs, are so important. At the same time, we have got to understand the broader fire that's being set against these resources that we need. It doesn't have to be this way. Mm-hmm. The hopefulness is actually very much, there's all these programs that indicate a little bit of investment in human beings. What I work in, I work in the realm where people with human beings are very creative, they're innovative, but we have so few resources to do what is necessary. So I think that we've got to figure out the ways that we put these things together, stop the militarization of our police, and defang these financial interests who basically are living off of the backs of the poor in our country.
Ethel Longscott is executive director of the Women's Economic Agenda Project. They promote economic human rights for poor women and their families. And Zachary Norris is executive director of the Ella Baker Center for Human Rights. They work to ensure opportunities for low-income communities and people of color. Today on Your Call, we are continuing our series on police, community, race, and justice. We got a lot of emails from listeners during this series, and then a lot of our guests, from professors to cops to public defenders, have said that the real issue is really poverty, and we really need to tackle that. So that's what we're talking about today. We'd love to hear from you, 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org or leave a comment on our website, yourcallradio.org. Let's hear from Amy in Alameda County. Hi, Amy. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Thanks a lot. I am the librarian at the Juvenile Hall, and I couldn't agree more with what everybody is saying. I think that most middle-class people of all races have no idea the experience of the youth.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to say a couple things. One, Old School Cafe in Bayshore, that wasn't mentioned. And also, we have a book list. Nationally, the librarians across the country have created a book list to help educate people about their the experience of the youth. You can find it. It's called In the Margins Book List and Award, and you can find it at Library Services for Youth in Custody.
Great. And again, that cafe, what is that called so we can put a link to it at yourcallradio.org?
It's called Old School Cafe. It's in Bayshore.
Okay.
And also In the Margins, Library Services for Youth in Custody.
Great. And so, Amy, let me ask you, since you have personal experience with this, what do you think is most effective in trying to raise awareness about what youth go through, the youth you deal with?
Well, I think forums like this is really good. I think, you know, personally reading is really good because it's a, you know, there's some great books out, Burning Down the House, Jeff Murphy. Those books really help. They've really helped to uncover what is going on. Of course, The New Jim Crow, but that's an older book. And just the experience of the youth. Again, I think the whole book list is on our, you know, people who have gone. I also really like On the Run by Alice Goffman. You know, the other thing is people who work with the youth have to get over this complex that we're saviors, you know. We are not saviors. We need to be in service of them and listen to them and be directed by them. And that's a big deal. And part of that has to do with being able to work together.
Well, Amy, thank you so much for calling in and sharing those resources. We'll put links to those organizations and that cafe, it sounds great, at yourcallradio.org. Ethel, do you want to jump in there?
Yeah, you know, I just love to hear that shout out to libraries anywhere, since that means that knowledge is free and available, and of course they're under tremendous assault in my city and county and across the country. And so to hear that kind of, you know, I think of our librarians as the early warriors along with the teachers. Love them. And I think this is about, do we keep these assets in the public arena or are they privatized? I mean, this is a subtext to everything we're discussing that we don't have open discussion about. And if we're going to talk about poverty elimination, we've got to talk about how do we keep those critical resources that we need, water, things like energy, all these various things in the public arena, the value of our workers who serve those resources in our area. We're doing partnerships that highlight precisely this role and value. But at the core, if there's our many lessons we can take from the Selma movie, is that it took a united movement to move our country from an apartheid situation into a situation where everyone could be integrated and into their respective classes. We're nothing short of that. We need a new human rights movement that certainly says people should not be executed for things that they haven't even had a trial on. And certainly right-thinking people know this, but we've got to elevate this. And I think that's where the question of we've got to combine the policy along with a broader movement and vision.
Ethel Long Scott is executive director of the Women's Economic Agenda Project. Zachary Norris is executive director of the Ella Baker Center for Human Rights. And now I would like to welcome Daniel Zapian to the show. Daniel is a youth organizer, photographer, and videographer with Silicon Valley Debug. That's a youth media and community organizing collective in San Jose. Hi, Daniel. Welcome to the show.
Oh, hello. Thank you for having me on here.
Well, it's great to have you. So just to let you know, we've been doing a series on community policing, race, and justice over the past 2 months, and almost all of our guests say that we really need to bring poverty into every conversation. A lot of people also say we need to learn more about what youth go through. So why don't you tell us a little bit about your story? I understand that when you were around 14, your parents got divorced, and you started to hang out with your friends on the streets. And 90% of the time, you were just kind of hanging out. And then the San Jose cops started patrolling your neighborhood more and more, and you got pulled over a bunch of times. Can you tell us about that?
Yes. You kind of told, like, the basis of it. A lot of times, the officers would look at us because we dressed a certain way. They off looks, they would, you know, tend to think that oh, you know, these, they're probably up to no good, when honestly we just couldn't afford like better clothes, you know, like that's an honest opinion, that's honest on how we were growing up. So kind of like moving along with that, like I end up getting some trouble and, you know, like a little bit here and there, but I wouldn't have gotten in trouble if I dressed better, if I what do you call it, if there was probably more activities at school, because I've always been an artistic youth. I've always been artistic growing up. So kind of, if there was more programs for myself and stuff like that, I probably would have been, you know, I would have probably not been in the situation I've been in.
Where did you go to school?
I went to Lincoln High School.
And so tell us what opportunities you had and didn't have, because we just did a show about testing and learned that because students are focused so much on tests, these extracurricular programs like art and other things have been cut down by about 40%. Is that what you experienced?
Where I went to school was very, it was a very art-based school. It was a very art-based school, but like a lot of times, a lot of the classes were filled before you had a chance to really get in on them.
Hmm.
So a lot of that really, you know, a lot of students had to go elsewhere. So, you know, you catch, you know, people doing graffiti, or I wouldn't even call it graffiti, you call it writing. Like, it's an art, and it's its own art form. They were doing that in their backpacks. You would catch a lot of, there was one or two classes that had camera, digital photography, and all that. I never had a chance to be a part of that. So the fact that when I grew up, I caught a case. I had to do I was on probation. Had to do some community service. I got sent over here to Silicon Valley Debug. They gave me an opportunity. So as for like the whole testing, basically a lot of schools are based off test scores and everything. And I don't know if I answered that correctly.
Yeah, no, that's great. I understand that when you got connected with Debug, they basically put a camera in your hand and said, "All right, this is yours. What do you want to do with it?"
Yeah, that's exactly what happened. I remember at the time, all I thought I could do was just do music, just rap, and I didn't think nothing more because I didn't really have anything. I didn't have money to go out and buy art supplies. I never had a camera in my hand. So the fact that I came over here and they're just like, "Oh, well, you like to do music? Well, let's get you to interview this guy. Let's get you to interview this artist, Playa Ray from San Jose." I was like, "Okay, let me try this out. You know, I've never done this before." So when I did it, it's just like it started catching on. I was like, "Wow, this is actually pretty cool. I've never had a camera in my hand. I've never had editing software. I've never had a stable computer like that." You know?
Wow.
That was strong enough to I could actually go on the internet and not freeze on me.
So that kind of changed your choices, your life. I mean, where you are today, because now you're doing youth organizing. You're now a mm-hmm. photographer. You're a videographer. Talk about some of the organizing that you're doing.
So a lot of the organizing, me and my partner Andrew, what we do is we go to schools. We go to halfway homes, which is, you know, the transitional period from a youth who was locked up or incarcerated, and they're on their way out to coming back into living with their parents again, or they're going to get their own house or an apartment that, you know, where they can live at. We kind of go to these places, and we talk to the youth, and we give them a chance to write. We give them a chance to talk about their story. We give them a chance to kind of give their opinion where it's actually the public can see it and actually credit it, that they're a published artist now, that they have something on their transcripts, or that if they go to court, they're like, "Well, this is what I've done. You can see it in this magazine, or you can see it online here." And it gives the judge like, "Oh, okay, they've done something," instead of just like, "Oh, they were just in a program." Hmm. It gives them that extra confidence level. And we've seen it ourselves in some of these youth where they end up coming after they're out of the program. They come talk to us and just, you know, they want to be a part of this more.
What are you hearing, Daniel, from youth about the larger conversation we're having in the media now about police and communities? Do you think that, do they feel like their stories are being told? Do you feel like you're...
Honestly, a lot of them feel like no one listens to them.
Hmm.
No one cares. Like, a lot of, you know, including myself when I was growing up, no one cared. You know, like, in a sense. Of course, you know, you have family and at times, but when you're out there in the street, when you're walking down the street and someone looks at you and they give you this like look, you can't, you know, after a certain amount of time, you're going to kind of like be like, what are you looking at? You know, and it gives off that persona of like, you're this thug, you're this everyday like gangster, but really you're just like upset that people look at you a certain way.
And upset that you don't have after school programs that allow you to pursue your interests.
There's nothing for you to be creative on. Mm.
Daniel Zapian is a youth organizer, photographer, and videographer with Silicon Valley Debug. That's a youth media and community organizing collective in San Jose. He said he really craved art in high school but didn't have the opportunities. Debug gave him a camera and that was it. Now he's doing organizing and photographing. We're also joined by Ethel Long Scott, Executive Director of the Women's Economic Agenda Project, and Zachary Norris, Executive Director of the Ella Baker Center for Human Rights. And you can join us at 866-798-8255. We're talking about how, you know, the role that poverty and economic opportunities play when we discuss police and community relations. You can also email feedback at yourcallradio.org. Zachary, I'm sure you work with so many kids like Daniel.
Yeah, I mean, in some ways I was Daniel, but had a number of fortune, one of which was my mom scraped and saved to send me to a private high school in Berkeley, not in Oakland. It was actually coming back to Oakland as a Harvard student where I started to learn about some of the graduation rates, including at the public high school that I would have gone to. I'm African-American, but I'm very light-skinned. And we know that not just across races, but even among races, there are racial disparities. So the lighter your skin, even among races, the lighter your sentence is likely to be for the same fact pattern. Hmm. And so this is 100% about ongoing structural racism, and we can do something about it. We need truth that recognizes that police are acting as Ethel said, as judge, jury, and executioner in many cases consistently, and we need to sit with that truth, and then we need to move to reconciliation and reinvestment and figuring out what are the concrete steps that we can begin to take that will make it less likely for folks to have those kinds of encounters, to continue for people to have more opportunities. And one thing that people can do concretely is come join us on March 3rd. We're holding a rally to call for the Alameda County Board of Supervisors to invest more resources in employment and housing opportunities for the formerly incarcerated so people can stay out of the system. We also, at the last time we went there, also called on the Board of Supervisors to support dropping the charges against the Black Friday 14, which stopped the BART train on Black Friday to call for an end to police violence against black people. And we want to continue to lift up that Black Lives Matter. We want to continue to lift up jobs, not jails, and books, not bars. And you can do it with us on March 3rd at the Alameda County Board of Supervisors.
And that is at 1045 County Building, 1221 Oak Street, 5th floor. Find more information at yourcallradio.org. We've got time for one more caller. Let's hear from Ashley in Oakland. Hi, Ashley. Thanks for holding.
Hi there. Thanks for having me. I'm really interested in the entire dialogue that's happening here. I work with one of the more marginalized populations in Oakland, which are the immigrants and refugees coming in from all over the world. And I was a language instructor. I was teaching adult ESL in a language institute here in Oakland. And my opinion about sort of looking at poverty and sort of the disparities among, or the opinions about poverty on a systemic level, the problem that I see is that there's sort of a lack of systemic empathy for people who are impoverished. Mm. Many of the people who are in power, who are making policies...
Ashley, are you still there? I think we lost Ashley. Let me ask you about that, Daniel. She was just talking about empathy. You had some pretty scary altercations with cops, I understand, when you were hanging out with your friends. What is that relationship? How has that relationship changed? Or has it since you've been doing youth organizing. Did we lose Daniel? Okay, sorry about that. I guess we lost Daniel. Maybe we can have him back on a future show about this. Ethel, what are your thoughts about that? Empathy.
Well, first of all, Debug does some just tremendous work on both fronts in terms of fighting police violence and this kind of elevation of the voice and organization of young people, and have done it traditionally, and it's so important. It's imperative. We're at a crisis in America, and I think that all of the other guests and our calls that have come in have all really underscored this. We can do better. We must do better. Mm-hmm. And I think it's so crucial that we begin to contemplate this idea that, you know, the tremendous abundance can be applied to servicing these kinds of human needs, or they can make 80 human beings on the planet who hold more wealth than 3.5 billion people. That's from the Oxfam report. Mm-hmm. If we think about that, it's insane, but it is exactly what is causing the problems we have. So this question of distribution of wealth, this question of how we direct ourselves to whose lives matter, is fundamental and timely. And I really thank you for the opportunity to speak to some of these things.
Well, thank you. And Zachary, final thoughts, about 30 seconds?
Yeah, folks should go to Silicon Valley debug.org, I believe, support their work. They are doing amazing work demonstrating what a committed group of folks can do. They have helped reduce people's sentences who are charged with trumped up charges. They've saved literally over 1,000 years of people's time through using community organizing strategies to impact the courtroom. So please support that work.
Zachary Norris is Executive Director of the Ella Baker Center for Human Rights. Ethel Long Scott is Executive Director of the Women's Economic Agenda Project. Sorry we lost Daniel Zapian, but we'll have him back. He's a youth organizer with Silicon Valley Debug. Thank you all for joining us.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you. And thank you for listening. Thanks for your phone calls and emails. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's your call. What do you want to know about President Obama's war resolution? On the next Your Call, we'll have a conversation about the president's request for Congress to authorize military actions against ISIS. For the past 6 months, the U.S. and coalition forces have carried out more than 2,000 bombing raids against ISIS positions in Syria and Iraq. So what's been the result of those bombings, and what are the details of this latest war resolution? It's Your Call with me, Rose Aguilar, and you. Support for Your Call comes from the listeners of KALW. To listen to past shows or sign up for our podcast, visit yourcallradio.org. Nock Nguyen produces the show, Malihe Razazan is senior producer, and Matt Martin is executive producer. Phil Hartman is our chief engineer, and Joe Burke is our studio engineer. Our theme music was composed and performed by Live Human. Special thanks to our partners at KUSP in Santa Cruz. You can email us at feedback@yourcallradio.org.